Chapter 15. Gorm seldom invoked the gods. It wasn't that he didn't believe that the Pantheon could or would involve themselves in the affairs of man. It was that, historically speaking, everything always got much more convoluted and dangerous when they did. As a general rule, he tried not to bother any deities in the hope that they would return the favor. Heights, however, inspired a bit of piety in the dwarf, if not propriety. He muttered prayers and curses in equal measure as he pressed his body against the stone of the cliff. Below him, the narrow path dropped away into a craggy abyss.
"Come on, Gorm," urged Laruna from the other side of the chasm.
"You can do this," added Jin. The problem with Bert's plan was that Rattrop's pathway up the high walls was intended for kobolds, and therefore was engineered for someone less than a quarter of Gorm's size. The trail led into passages so narrow that the heroes had to crawl on their bellies. It brought them through ravines so tight they had to walk sideways. But worst of all were the narrow pathways that ran along the cliffs, barely as wide as Gorm's boots.
"Thrice cursed! Bloody fire!"
the dwarf grunted, inching his way along the path. With a final push, he leapt and landed belly first on the wider ridge beyond the gulf. For a brief moment, he scrabbled at loose rocks, but Geist grabbed him by the collar and hauled him to relative safety. Just around the next crag, the trail widened into a large, flat ridge, painted blue and black by long shadows cast in the evening's last light. The fortress of Highwatch dominated the view from the ledge, looming above the heroes even across the mountainous gulf.
"Is this it?" asked Heraldin.
"There doesn't seem to be any more of the path," said Jin, looking up the mountain.
"What did you expect?" asked Bert. "We're in the high mountains, and we can see Highwatch."
"You said there'd be a fort," said Gorm.
"There is, sort of."
Laruna pulled aside some scrub brush to reveal a motley heap of stones, no higher than Gorm's waist, arrayed in a semicircle against the fortress of Highwatch.
"There it is,"
said Bert, his tail wagging madly as he ran around the tiny fortification.
"Ratrup's fort! Legends walked where we are now."
"It's a pile of rocks," said Gorm.
"It ain't,"
Bert growled and shook his head.
"That ain't just a pile of rocks. It's disguised to look like one, so the lightlings looking out of Highwatch would think it's harmless."
"Well, it's working a little too well, then," said Gorm, "'cause I ain't that far away, and even I think it's just a pile."
"It isn't a pile of rocks!"
Bert's hackles were up far enough to give the impression of a ruffled collar.
"When you're through dissecting the scenery, we have more pressing matters to attend to," Heraldin said from the easternmost edge of Rattrop's ledge.
The bard and Geist stood on the edge of the cliff, staring out over the Ruskan landscape. The eastern foothills of the high walls teemed with shambling ranks of the walking dead. Beyond that, the blighted grasslands were covered with a seething black mass of undead, illuminated by the occasional glow of erupting shadow flame.
Gorm turned to Laruna. "You ready with that staff?"
The Solomancer nodded, her mouth pulled into a tight line. She walked to the edge of the cliff and set the bottom of the wormwood staff into a small notch in the stone, releasing it with an arcane gesture and a murmured incantation. The staff remained upright, an amber glow emanating from the crystal at its top.
"What does this thing do, anyway?" asked Heraldin.
"Lots of things," said Laruna. "It amplifies power, aids in weaving, provides metamagical benefits."
"Yes, yes, that's fine," said the bard, "but I meant here, now. Specifically, what can it do against that many undead?"
"We don't know exactly. We're going to use it as a focus for sigils of light and life and find out."
Jin took Laruna's hand in his own as they stared out at the grim army. "Together."
"Whatever happens,"
the Solomancer whispered with a brave smile.
"Whatever happens," said Jin.
"Whatever happens should happen quick," said Gorm.
"Right."
Laruna released Jin's hand and began to weave. Wisps of flame flickered into existence around the Solomancer's arms, spiraling around her wrists toward her palms, where her fingers deftly twisted them into the beginnings of a spell. Her hair rose up as though carried by the wind, and soon the mage herself lifted off the ground, borne aloft by the currents of magic.
Gorm shivered and adjusted his furs and cloak. A deeper chill settled over the plateau as Laruna's gathering power drew out the last of the warmth in the air. He noticed Bert creeping back away from the mages. "Off to hide?" he asked Bert.
"Hey, do you know the average lifespan of a kobold soldier?" said Bert. "It's one battle."
"I'd heard as much," Gorm said.
"That's why I make a point of attending zero battles. So if you need anything afterward, give me a shout. Otherwise, I'm going to duck down behind those shrubs and have a smoke."
"Fair enough," said Gorm, turning back to the mages. Now Laruna wove thick cords of flame into strange sigils, and her eyes glowed with power. She spoke otherworldly litanies in an echoing voice, and Gorm could see that Jin was mouthing the words along with the Solomancer as he looked up at her. When the chant reached its zenith, the Solomancer thrust both hands toward the wormwood staff. Her flaming symbols flew into the staff's crystal, followed by the errant threads whirling around her. The glow in the Solomancer's eyes faded, and she dropped back to the ground as all the magic nearby was drawn into the sorceress' focus. They stood and watched the staff for a breathless moment. The glow in its crystal faltered, then faded altogether.
"Did it fail?" said Heraldin.
Gorm scratched his beard.
"It must need to..."
The wormwood staff flared with searing golden light, bright enough to send the heroes stumbling backward. Gorm shut his eyes and dove for cover, but he could still see the blinding, all-consuming luminance. Tyrann surveyed the battlefield from a raised platform. Before him, endless ranks of the dead rolled like a black wave toward the mountain fortress. Beyond the marching ranks, he could see the soldiers and warriors on the walls of Highwatch staring with grim determination at the approaching force. Some of the figures on the ramparts scuttled around what looked like massive glass spheres, glowing with a wan green light.
"Is everything in order, Knight Commander?" asked Datar.
"We launched an hour ago, Lord."
Tyrann turned back to the Lich.
"Excellent," said Datar. "And how goes the campaign?"
The Knight Commander glanced down at the clipboard. A grid of figures was scrawled out in the head of marketing's handwriting, for lack of a better term.
"A disappointing conversion rate, sir."
Datar looked at Tyrann. "And by that, you mean..."
Tyrann was prepared for the line of inquiry. The key to managing failure was to make it sound like success.
"Our forecasts predicted this particular demographic, especially given their geographic location and particular needs, would be very reluctant to embrace our message. So I'm happy to report that we've confirmed our forecasting model to be accurate."
It also helped to make everything sound as complicated and technical as possible.
"Well, good," said Datar without enthusiasm.
Tyrann moved on to future successes quickly.
"The head of marketing is working on the next campaign. We think the fall of Highwatch will give us a powerful message to..."
"Yes, yes, I'm sure it will be grand. It seems the task of taking Highwatch shall fall to other methods. Are the troops ready, Lady Genevieve?"
"Ready and willing, Laird,"
said Genevieve, hovering in the air above them. "Great. And your arrangements are ready, Lady Caribay?"
The vampire materialized from the shadows.
"Indeed, master."
"Excellent," the Lich nodded happily. "The moment is at hand, yes? Bacopel's Toccata and Fugue in D minor should do nicely."
From behind them, the gnomish organ roared to life. High, piping notes filled the air.
"Ah, now, there we are."
Datar paused for a moment, humming along with the music and counting out the notes. At the height of the piece's exposition, the Lich pointed to a brazier on the ground borne by a skeletal construct. A flare of viridian shadow flame separated from the blaze and rose high into the air, bursting on a high note. Across the battlefield, the undead shambled forward at the signal. Flashes of light erupted from the ramparts of Highwatch as its defenders sent arrows and spells raining down on the encroaching monsters. Lady Caribay gestured toward the spells.
"Master, perhaps it is time to..."
"Almost. Timing is everything."
The Lich swept his hand back and forth with the deep swells of the music. "And you may give the signal in 5, 4, 3, 2. A boom like the god's own cannon rang out, and a wave of searing light washed over the undead legion. The southern half of the front ranks were vaporized in an instant. Ghosts and banshees caught in the blast were reduced to nothing more than traces of ectoplasm and faint wails on the rushing wind. The blazing light remained, even after the shockwave faded, shining like a beacon in the high walls south of the fortress. Something about the light held Tyron's gaze as a flame binds a moth's attention, and as he stared, he felt a deep terror welling up within him. He could sense the master's commands in the back of his mind, the crown of iron thorns compelling him to stand firm, but to no avail. The knight commander took a step back. On the edge of his vision, he could see the ranks of the undead breaking apart in open flight, and he heard the banshees and ghosts screeching around him as they retreated. "Why is it always at the worst possible time?" sighed Datar. "What is it?" Tyron backed away from the horrible light. "A distraction. How fortunate that I have countermeasures," said the Lich, rising into the air. "Release the infernal beasts! Lady Caribay, I leave the fortress to you. Knight Commander, the beasts!" The last order snapped Tyron from his stupor. He turned and pushed his way through the fleeing mob of undead. Zombies, ghouls, and skeletons all ran from the sight of the agonizing light, and the Knight Commander had to fight the tide to reach the large cage.
"Open the cage!" Tyron yelled, staggering toward the door. "Loose the infernal beasts!"
Nobody responded. Ned and Ted had fled with the rest of the dead. With an unholy growl, Tyron shoved aside a panicked skeleton and fumbled with the latch. Dark shapes stirred in the depths of the cage, lurking shadows that the magical light never seemed to touch. Then the latch released, and within a split second the cage door burst open in a sudden wave of fire and heat. The Knight Commander fell to the ground as three blazing shapes erupted from the cage and launched into the air. They trailed after the distant lich like fiery comets arcing across the sky. Lights swam in front of Katha's eyes as she ran through waves of glowing grasses, psychedelic colors rolling through the field with every gust of wind. Strange faces leered up at her from the logs and rocks littering her path, and a gibbous moon laughed at her as she fled. She wasn't sure what was pursuing her. It often sounded like more than one thing, and it certainly had more legs and eyes than any one creature should rightfully possess. At times it looked like a massive bat-winged scarg, at others a sort of fleshy drake with faces leering from every inch of its skin, and sometimes it seemed just a bubbling black shape swimming through the land behind her. It nipped at her heels, howling garbled words in an incomprehensible tongue. Her pursuer's amorphous nature had initially led Katha to believe that it was merely a hallucination of her elixir-deprived mind, but then the first swipe of its arm, or perhaps its tentacle, had connected with enough force to knock her off course. Pain has a way of connecting you to reality, or at least something approximating it. The threat was clear enough. The ground beneath her swam, catching her leg. With a choked cry, she stumbled and rolled through yellow and blue wisps. By the time she righted herself, her pursuer had surrounded her. Or rather, her pursuers. Their faces were blue and scaled, each with long fangs and no fewer than three eyes. Their bodies ran together like too many slimes pressed into a barrel, but their faces were distinct and grinning with undisguised malice. They pressed in around her, and amid their laughter and gibbering, she heard the whispers of steel being drawn from scabbards.
"Go away!"
she screamed, closing her eyes and putting her hands over her ears. She could hear her own blood roaring in her veins.
"Just go away!"
The first blow came from behind, a hard knock to the back of her head that sent her staggering. A knee caught her in the stomach, knocking the breath from her, and another strike hit her in the shoulder. She lashed back with a right hook that flowed into a high kick, both of which connected firmly. A hard punch slammed into her side, and the uppercut that followed took her off her feet. She landed hard on a field of teeth and bone, the taste of copper and dirt filling her mouth. A large, scaled hand grabbed her wrist, and another seized her ankles. Katha let out a long scream. To her surprise, the hands let go. She curled into a small ball, still shrieking, and braced herself for an attack that never came. After a while, it occurred to her that she wasn't the only one screaming. She opened one eye and caught a brief glimpse of one of the blue-scaled creatures sailing through the air, its face a mask of terror. A couple of her assailants lay twitching on the ground, bent in places that seemed unnatural even for their strange anatomy. Another attacker ran across her field of vision, but something grabbed the creature mid-stride and pulled it into the air. A moment later, its shrieks cut off with a sudden crack. Katha shut her eyes and held her breath. The screams of her remaining pursuers faded in the distance. She heard the ragged breathing of a huge creature and could sense its presence inches from her. Her whole body trembled, no matter how she tried to keep still. She was startled as great hands slipped under her, but they were gentle and soft. Strong arms lifted her slowly, cradling her to a massive, furry chest. She felt the wind in her hair, but the great creature sheltered her body from the chill. She opened one eye, and this time she saw a shaggy blue and gray coat of fur and hands the color of stone. When her eyelid drifted closed again, though, she could see wild flowers and green mosses and an ancient maple tree. For the first time in a long while, she felt safe.
"Just like the garden," she murmured.
As hallucinations went, it was as pleasant as she could hope for. She held on to the thought until finally, mercifully, sleep found her.
"No time for laying around,"
Gorm gave the bard's leg a kick.
"Get up!"
"Did it work?" asked Heraldin, pushing himself to his feet.
"Had an effect, that's for sure."
Gorm squinted as he tried to survey the battlefield beyond the brilliant light.
"Seems like there's a lot less of the undead out there."
"But did we kill Datar?" asked Laruna.
"No," said Jin. The Noctomancer pointed to the sky, where four glowing comets were hurtling toward the heroes. "We just made him angry." The foremost plume of light accelerated. Gorm barked a few orders, but his party was still scrambling to get into formation when Datar Ermion arrived in a burst of violet flames. He hovered in the air above the heroes, arms outstretched and shadows dancing from his fingers.
"Who dares to stand against you again?"
The Lich's grandiose speech slumped into paternal exasperation.
"What are you doing here?"
We've come.
Jin choked back a stammer.
"It doesn't even matter," snarled Datar. "The gods alone know how anyone could blunder into so many of my plans, let alone my son. You're a veritable avatar of Novian philosophy."
Jin pointed at his father.
You can't possibly have intended to cause all of this chaos, I know. That would require careful preparations, and, well, you see where I'm going with this."
Datar was calm as he descended to the plateau.
"I'm more inclined to believe your talent for disrupting my schemes is nothing more than a novice's luck, and as you don't seem to have a serendipitous troll to rescue you this time, we can surmise that luck has run..."
A sudden blast of golden flame melted through the Lich's magical defenses, cutting off his speech and very nearly doing the same to his arm. Datar recoiled with a hiss.
"Gods, do you ever stop talking?" growled Laruna.
She leveled the wormwood staff at the Lich as she advanced on him. The brilliant light had faded from its crystal, but the gem still thrummed with latent power.
"The wormwood staff of Geffen," said Datar, eyeing Laruna warily. "How did you—"
"Well, I suppose it doesn't matter how you found it. It does change things, though." Laruna fired another volley of sorcery. The Lich dodged and returned a blast of violet flames, but she brushed away his attack with a wave of the staff. Datar followed up with a spell when Laruna was off balance, but a bolt of noctomancy from Jin threw the Lich off guard again. Gorm stalked around the edge of the magical battle, looking for an opening to strike. He spotted an opportunity, signaled to Geist, and made it two steps into his charge when a flaming comet crashed into the stone in front of him. As Gorm leapt back, the black ball at the projectile's blazing center unfolded itself into a hulking form with tusks of iron and bone and a single, baleful eye that glowed like magma.
I wouldn't say 1 against 5 is unfair under these circumstances, Datar called, dodging a blast of solomancy, but it does seem inefficient. My infernal beasts will help speed things up. Gorm took a step back and found himself next to Geist, who was facing off against what appeared to be a crossbreed of a pit dog and a gnomish furnace.
Infernal beasts! You ever seen the likes of these before?
Geist shook his head grimly. I think the brute force of my netherbore and the fury of my hellhound will be more than a match for the likes of you, said the lich.
And this one?
Said Heraldin, pointing his rapier at some sort of flaming rodent in front of him. What do you call this little fellow?
Ahem, yes. That's the fiendish weasel, said Datar, with notably less enthusiasm.
The fiendish weasel, laughed Heraldin. Look at his tiny angry eyes. He's more adorable than
Arrarablar!
The fiendish weasel, while indisputably cute, was also remarkably ferocious. It whipped around the bard in an orange blur, a tiny firestorm that left bite marks and burns in its wake.
I didn't exactly set out to make one, said the lich smugly, but you know how it is when you're experimenting. Every so often you get one of those happy accidents.
Gorm kept a wary eye on the one-eyed boar. The mnemonic creature pawed at the stone with an iron hoof, snorting with obvious menace.
Easy, lad.
Easy, said Gorm slowly. The nether boar loosed a horrible squeal and launched itself toward the dwarf. Red flames bloomed around the creature as it lifted its hooves from the ground and flew forward, gobbets of magma trailing from its fangs. Gorm fainted, then dove to the left once the boar was too close to correct itself. The beast rushed by in a storm of fire and smoke, sparks flying from its hooves as it attempted to stop, a classic straight-line charge from a creature with no depth perception.
Easy, Gorm muttered with a small smile.
Many low-ranked heroes had been felled by monsters of sufficient speed and size, effectively employing a good old-fashioned trampling, but any experienced hero knew how to deal with such tactics. He sprinted across the battlefield. As he ran, Gorm caught glimpses of the mages battling Datar. The Noctomancer and Solomancer sent coordinated lances of light and shadow at the lich, but Datar dodged their spells as he flitted through the air. The flame around the elder Ermion's skull surged in intensity as he wove his own dazzling counterattack, a great web of shadow and lightning that spread across the sky with a crack of thunder. Laruna only just managed to deflect the assault with a burst of light from the wormwood staff. Gorm stopped when he was within a few feet of where the stony plateau met the jagged wall of the mountain. As he turned to ready himself, he nearly stepped on the prone figure of Bert crouched behind a gnarled mountain shrub.
"What are you doing?" hissed the kobold. "Go fight! You go and hide! What do you think I'm doing behind this thrice-cursed bush?" snapped Bert. "Somewhere else!" Gorm roared.
The kobold scurried away, likely due to the unholy roar of the charging nether boar. Gorm waited until he saw the red of the boar's eye, and then dove to the side again. He was already up and running as he heard the squeal of fear and the screeching of the iron hooves trying to stop on weather-worn granite. A moment later, however, the nether boar loosed a triumphant bellow as it managed to stop a few inches from ramming into the wall.
"That's right," Gorm muttered as he ran. "Get confident."
Heraldin stumbled into view. The infernal weasel raced around the bard's body like a dancing flame.
"The teeth!"
the bard cried, wildly swinging his rapier at the tiny figure darting around him.
"The tiny fiery teeth!" "Out of the way!"
Gorm shouted, shouldering the hapless bard out of his path. He could hear the nether boar flying up behind him. Straight ahead, Geist was locked in combat with the hellhound, his dancing blades flashing amber and crimson in the glow of the infernal beast.
"Incoming!"
Geist caught the dwarf's eye and gave a hint of a nod. It was the only signal Gorm needed. He stayed on a collision course until the last possible moment, when he dove to the right with a full-throated scream.
"Now!"
The weapons master leapt aside with a flourish of his cloak. On the other side of the garment, the nether boar was doubtlessly surprised to see the hellhound, which itself gave a desperate yip at the sight of the oncoming avalanche of demonic pig flesh. The squeal of the nether boar and the shriek of its hooves on the stone both cut off with a hork! As the hellhound lodged headfirst in the pig's wide maw,
Thus entangled, the infernal beasts tumbled end over end, choking and yelping until they crashed into the pile of rocks that had previously been known as Rattrop's Fort.
"Hey, watch it!" shouted Bert from wherever he was hiding. "That's a historic sight!"
The infernal weasel ceased its assault when it saw the feebly twitching forms of its two companions, and a spark of comprehension appeared within its cute little eyes. With a peal of high-pitched, sinister laughter, the last of the infernal beasts leapt from the stricken bard, launched into the air, and flew away.
"You think that did it?" Gorm asked Gaste, staring at the nether boar and hellhound.
The weapons master shrugged and watched Heraldin try to pat out his smoldering clothes. The prone beasts erupted in a mushroom cloud of flame and dust. Gorm ducked under a flying piece of shrapnel, and when he looked up, there was nothing left of the beasts, or Rattrop's fort, save a scorch mark on the stone.
"Oh, come on!"
hollered Bert. A low rumble, dark and sinister, was audible amidst the sound of the mage's battle. The charred stone began to bubble and bunch, and the smoke coagulated into two small forms, each no bigger than a cook's pot. Gorm saw hints of red eyes and yellowed teeth, before the pair flew off into the sky on leathery black wings, still rumbling with horrible laughter.
"What are demons doing here?" asked Gorm,
watching the retreating fiends.
"And what is that?" said Heraldin, pointing.
A brown and gray blur was streaking toward where the mages were still locked in sorcerous combat.
"Whatever it is," said Heraldin, "it's headed straight for—
Jin!"
Gorm shouted, already running. Yet his warning was too late. The creature leapt upon the Noctomancer, tackling the wizard to the ground. Jin waved his arms in futile panic as his assailant dove for his face.
"Hang on, lad!" Gorm shouted, readying his axe. "It's a—
Dog?" said Laruna. The magical battle momentarily subsided as Jin sat back up, a brown and gray mongrel licking his goatee.
Is that—
Patches? Jin tried to study the dog's features in between vigorous slurps. Patches paused his slobbery assault and barked twice, his tail wagging furiously.
"But how? You were a puppy, and that was over 20...
Insight flashed in Jin's eyes, preceding a dark storm cloud that rolled over his face.
"You!"
he snarled at the lich hovering in the air above him.
"Well, this is... unexpected."
Datar scratched the back of his skull with a bony hand,
and a bit awkward.
"This has something to do with the hellhound, doesn't it?" The Noctomancer pushed Patches aside and stood to confront the lich.
"Yes, well, the demise of any soul-bound subject seems to give nearby matter the potential to reconstitute—"
"Yes or no?" snapped Jin. "Did you turn my dog into a hellhound?"
"I knew you wouldn't handle this well," Datar sighed. "Technically, I soul-bound Patches to a demon, and then a hellhound was born at some point decades later.
You killed my puppy, the pet that you gave me when mother died." The lich avoided the Noctomancer's eyes.
"Well, I'm not proud of it. The Leviathan Project had run out of funding, you see, and I hadn't any other test subjects, but we really felt we were near a breakthrough. You told me Patches ran away."
"In my defense, once the experiment began, he did try to—"
You monster!"
shouted Jin, hurling a bolt of lightning at his father. "This reaction, this is why I had to hide things from you," said the lich, dodging easily.
"You always say I ruined this plan or that plan."
"It's not about any one plan," interrupted the lich. "It's that it's all part of a larger pattern."
But you stole from me, killed my dog, and lied about it. To your own son,"
Jin snarled.
"You're evil. You always were."
"Oh, evil? Now you're throwing around those outmoded labels as well," said the lich, clearly offended.
"Did you read any of my work since I was killed?
Have you even been to Cash?"
"No. I don't need to—"
"That's the problem,"
yelled the lich.
"You don't listen. You don't even know what you're
dealing with, but you still blunder in like any other ignoramus spouting off about old ideas without thinking them through. And that's how you ruin my plans over and over again.
Jin was about to holler a reply when a bang sounded behind Datar, not unlike the fireworks that Scribkin often peddled at big celebrations. In the distance, a pinpoint of violet light was ascending from the ranks of the dead into the sky.
"Case in point," said Datar, waving a hand at the rising spark. "Now they've had to start without me. Do you know how long I've been planning this moment, and now I'm going to miss it?"
You can't. Jin couldn't manage more than an unintelligible snarl as he loosed another spell at his father. The lich dodged the weave of black shadows and blue lightning, but Jin corrected the blast's trajectory with a twist of his wrist. The searing spell raked across his father's robes. Datar shrieked in pain and floated to a higher altitude, clutching his side. The fires in the sockets of his eyes blazed as he glared down at his son.
"Well, boy, it seems you've managed to learn some skill after all."
Jin sputtered in fury, trying to answer.
Your fight is here, with me!
"No, you fool," snarled the lich. "There is no fight. I've already won."